Welcome to the True Crime Never Sleeps podcast. We dive into stories of true crime, from unsolved cold cases to historic kidnapping to gangsters and beyond. We are your source for true crime. We thank you for listening.
Brutal murder of Kate Teal in 1909 has left investigators stumped for over a century. Despite modern technology and fresh attempts to solve the case, it remains one of history's most baffling cold cases. Why has this murder stayed unsolved for so long? Who was Kate Teal? And what led to her tragic end? These are just a few of the burning questions that experts have been trying to answer for decades. In tonight's episode, we'll dive deep into the details of her life, the flawed investigation that followed her death, and new evidence that's come to light. Were there suspects at the time? And how did a small-town murder in 1909 leave a lasting impact on the community? We'll explore all the latest theories and forensic techniques applied to the mystery and try to understand why it continues to baffle experts today. Stick around, because we'll be revealing the startling clues that investigators missed over 100 years ago, the new breakthroughs that just might bring this cold case closer to being solved, and a shocking theory that could finally provide answers. If you're fascinated by cold cases and unsolved mysteries, you're in the right place. Let's uncover the secrets behind the murder of Kate Teal. Secrets that have haunted investigators for over a century. Kate Teal was a woman who lived a life full of contradictions, shaped by hardship, loneliness, and the devastating loss of her husband. She wasn't known for wealth or social standing in St. Louis, Missouri. Rather, she was recognized by those around her as a woman who coped with life through a heavy reliance on alcohol. Living in a small rented room on the second floor of a house divided into apartments, Kate's life revolved around one simple routine: her frequent trip to Slivers Saloon, located just across the street. Kate's husband, Samuel Teal, had been her closest companion. Samuel was significantly older than Kate, and the couple shared a mutual love for drinking. The two were often seen together, side by side, bonded not just by marriage, but by their common affection for alcohol. However, their time together was tragically cut short when Samuel died of natural causes a few months before Kate's own death. His passing left Kate devastated. In her grief, she delayed reporting his death for 4 days, keeping his body propped up in a chair by the fire while she drowned her sorrow in a drunken stupor. This incident marked a turning point in Kate's life. It revealed a deep vulnerability, a woman who had lost not just her husband, but the only consistent relationship she had. Samuel's death affected her profoundly, and her worry about his burial in a potter's field, an indigent grave for those too poor to afford a proper burial, only added to her emotional turmoil. She spoke of it often to the officers who eventually came to her home, hinting at the guilt and sadness she carried. With Samuel gone, Kate's life became even more isolated. Her only remaining companions were her two small dogs, noisy creatures that filled her home with constant barking. She eventually gave one of the dogs to a friend, but she kept the other, a small brown dog that was fiercely loyal to her. Despite its high-pitched, persistent barking, this dog was by her side until the very end. Kate's reputation in town was that of a solitary figure, dependent on alcohol and lacking meaningful human connections. Her main interactions came from her neighbors in the building and the patrons of Slivers Saloon, but she wasn't known for maintaining strong friendships. Instead, her life seemed centered around her own personal grief and struggle, with alcohol serving as her primary coping mechanism. Despite her modest means, Kate had a peculiar habit. She frequently boasted to others about having large sums of money. Whether it's truth or drunken exaggeration is unclear, but she told enough people that she had hidden cash in her room that it became a common rumor in town. This boast, though likely untrue, given that she often pawned her watch to make ends meet, could have contributed to her death. Her wealthy brother, who sent her small amounts of money to keep her going, limited the funds he provided, knowing that she would spend any extra on alcohol. Yet Kate's stories about having money created a dangerous narrative that could have attracted unwanted attention. Her relationship with her neighbors was mostly cordial, though not particularly close. One neighbor, Mary Luca, was concerned enough to check on Kate when she hadn't left her room, but there didn't seem to be any deep connections among the tenants. Kate's only real bond was with Samuel, and after his death, she seemed to retreat further into isolation and drink. In terms of personal conflicts and tensions, none were immediately apparent in her day-to-day life. However, the frequent presence of alcohol, her boasting about hidden money, and her increasingly isolated and vulnerable state made her an easy target. It is possible that someone believed her stories about the money and saw an opportunity, especially considering the chaotic state of her room and the strange nature of her death. Kate Teal lived a life shaped by loss and loneliness, with her only comforts coming from the saloon across the street and her brown dog. As we look deeper into her death, we must consider not just the events leading up to that fateful night, but the emotional and social vulnerabilities that might have made her a victim in her own home. When police arrived at the scene of Kate Teal's murder in 1909, they were greeted by chaos. The locked door to Kate's apartment, the barking dog, and the unsettling discovery of her bloodied body made it clear that something horrible had happened. The investigators kicked off immediately, but from the start it was plagued by a series of critical errors and oversights that would ultimately doom the case to remain unsolved. Lead investigator on the case was Sergeant Smith of the St. Louis Police Department. After forcing the door open, he entered the room and immediately had to fend off Kate's small brown dog, which attacked him in a desperate bid to protect its owner. This small detail, while seemingly inconsequential, highlights one of the first issues with the investigation. The crime scene was compromised almost immediately. The chaos of entering the room, focusing on the dog, and trying to assess the situation, the scene wasn't properly secured. The initial walkthrough of the crime scene revealed a disorderly room, with clothes and personal belongings scattered across the floor. Kate lay on her bed, face up, clutching a butcher knife, leading Sergeant Smith to first consider the possibility of suicide. However, upon closer inspection, it became clear that the knife was clean, and the two stab wounds, one through Kate's eye and another into her side, were too precise and narrow for the large knife to have caused. This led to the swift conclusion that she had been murdered. One of the most significant errors occurred right at this early stage: contamination of the crime scene. In 1909, there was no concept of preserving the integrity of a crime scene as there is today. Neighbors, police officers, and even Kate's dog were all allowed in the room. Disturbing potential evidence, any chance of collecting clean fingerprints, footprints, or other physical evidence was likely lost due to the foot traffic. Modern-day crime scenes are carefully sealed off, with forensic teams painstakingly collecting evidence. But this was not the practice in the early 20th century. Officers simply did not have the training or the knowledge to understand the importance of preserving every detail as it was found.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Another significant issue was the rushed conclusions drawn by investigators. The fact that Sergeant Smith briefly considered suicide, despite the multiple wounds and the clean knife, points to the lack of forensic analysis and the pressure to come up with an immediate explanation. This rush to judgment likely closed off other potential lines of inquiry too early in the investigation, particularly the possibility that Kate knew her killer, or that there was more than one person involved in the crime. The assumption that this was not a robbery based solely on the fact that Kate had little of value also skewed the direction of the investigation. The investigators did collect some key pieces of evidence, the most important of which was a single gold cufflink found in Kate's room. This cufflink was believed to have been dropped by the murderer during the struggle, and officers hoped to find its match. However, no pair to the cufflink was ever located, and it remains a tantalizing yet unproductive clue. The police questioned Kate's neighbors, but the interrogations were limited in scope and lacked the rigorous follow-up that modern investigations demand. Other critical evidence was either overlooked or lost. For example, while it was noted that the room had been searched, there was no detailed inventory taken of Kate's belongings, meaning that it was impossible to know for certain whether anything had been stolen. There was also no records of the condition of the window or the balcony, which could have offered clues about whether someone had entered or exited the room that way. The barking dog, which had been a constant presence throughout the night and the following day, should have raised more red flags earlier in the investigation. The fact that the dog had been barking incessantly since the early morning hours of Thursday suggested that something had occurred far earlier than initially thought. Yet officers did not immediately piece together that the dog's behavior was a possible indicator of when the crime took place. The biggest challenge the investigators faced was the forensic limitations of the time. In 1909, DNA testing, fingerprint analysis, and blood pattern analysis were not available to law enforcement. Autopsies, while conducted by medical professionals, were far more primitive than today. Kate's body was taken to the morgue and examined by a coroner's jury, a group of local doctors tasked with determining the cause of death. Unlike modern forensic pathologists, this group of doctors made judgments based largely on observation and rudimentary tests, rather than advanced scientific methods. The coroner's jury concluded that Kate's death was caused by the stab wounds, but their examination did not extend to detailed analysis, such as the precise time of death or the angle of the wounds, which might have provided clues about the position of the attacker or the type of weapon used. Additionally, the jury had no way of examining microscopic fibers, tissues, or other small but critical pieces of evidence that could have pointed to a suspect. Their decision was largely based on what they had thought had happened, rather than concrete forensic data. One critical piece of evidence was the murder weapon itself. Kate had been stabbed with a very specific type of knife, long and narrow, commonly used in animal processing. However, this detail was not properly followed up on. The murder weapon was never found, and despite the officer's knowledge of the type of knife, there was no systematic search for anyone in the area who might have owned or had access to such a weapon. The question of Kate's neighbors, Mary, Luca, Mike, and 12-year-old Eva Dayton, did provide some useful information. They reported seeing Kate with a man, later identified as John DeBorta, on the night before her murder. DeBorta was seen drinking beer with Kate in her room, but there was no immediate effort to gather more detailed information about his whereabouts after that night. Instead, the investigation seemed to focus solely on superficial details, like the blue bucket they were drinking from, rather than trying to build a timeline of DeBorta's activities or pressing him for details about the hours leading up to Kate's death. DeBorta's arrest, followed by his quick release, was another example of the hasty nature of the investigation. Although police found a jacket with stains on the sleeves in his home, which they initially thought might be blood, they quickly dropped him as a suspect when it turned out the stains weren't blood. This decision ended further questioning or scrutiny of DeBorta, leaving open the possibility that important details were missed. At the same time, the second suspect, Charles Alwins, was arrested for making suspicious statements about the money Kate supposedly had in her room. He claimed that during a job he had done for Kate, he saw her pull out large bills from a jar, leading some to believe that the money could have been a motive. Yet, once his alibi checked out, Alwins was quickly dismissed from the investigation, and the lead regarding the money was not thoroughly followed. With no solid evidence, no reliable suspects, and no forensic breakthroughs, the investigation quickly stalled. Critical opportunities were missed early on, including the lack of a thorough timeline, mishandling of potential evidence, and the failure to fully interrogate those closest to Kate. The rushed and incomplete nature of the investigation ultimately led to the case growing cold as police moved on to other matters. In retrospect, the investigation into Kate Teal's murder was a textbook case of how the limitations of the time doomed the case from the start. The missteps and oversights not only allowed the killer to escape justice, but also left the community of St. Louis with a mystery that would haunt it for generations to come. In the aftermath of Kate Teal's brutal murder, the St. Louis police scrambled to identify potential suspects. With little physical evidence to go on in a chaotic crime scene, they had to rely on witness statements and circumstantial clues to form an initial list of possible culprits. As is often the case in high-profile murders, theories and accusations from the community began to swirl, fueling suspicions and pointing fingers in various directions. As we previously mentioned, the investigators ruled out their two primary suspects, and new theories emerged about the nature of the crime. Some believed that Kate had been targeted because of her boast about hidden money, but not by anyone she knew personally. In this theory, someone who overheard Kate at the saloon may have decided to break into her room to steal the money she claimed to have, only to be interrupted by her. The state of her room, which appeared to have been searched, lent some credence to this theory. but the absence of any significant theft suggested that if this was the motive, it had been poorly executed. Others speculated that Kate's death could have been a crime of passion, committed by someone close to her, who was driven by personal animosity or jealousy. The fact that Kate had been stabbed with a specific kind of long, narrow knife led some to wonder if her killer had a background in a similar trade, such as animal processing. However, no evidence ever surfaced to link anyone in Kate's circle to such a weapon. Like many unsolved murders, Kate Teal's death quickly became the subject of a rampant speculation within the community. As news of the murder spread, so did rumors about who might have been responsible. Some believed that Kate's lifestyle, particularly her heavy drinking and frequenting of the saloon, had made her vulnerable to attack by someone she crossed paths with on one of her drunken outings. Others pointed fingers at different members of the community, particularly those who had interacted with Kate in the days leading up to her death. However, many of these theories were based on little more than gossip, and the police struggled to separate fact from fiction. Without solid evidence to back up any of these accusations, the investigation remained stalled. The failure to make an arrest in Kate Teal's murder case can largely be attributed to the lack of forensic evidence and the limitation of investigative techniques in 1909. Without modern tools like DNA testing, fingerprint analysis, or even ballistics, investigators had little to go on besides witness testimony and circumstantial evidence. The mishandling of the crime scene, combined with rushed conclusions and the absence of detailed follow-up on leads, meant that crucial opportunities were missed. Promising early leads involving John DeBorta and Charles Alwyns fizzled out quickly as the evidence against them failed to hold up under scrutiny. DeBorta's presence in Kate's room the night before her murder was not enough to tie him to the crime, and Charles's suspicious statements about her money were ultimately not corroborated by any real proof. As the days turned into weeks and then months, without any breakthroughs, the police had no choice but to release their suspects and move on. The case remained open, but with no fresh evidence or solid leads, Kate Teal's murder became one of St. Louis's enduring mysteries. With no strong suspects, no arrests, and little evidence to work from, the murder of Kate Teal slipped into the realm of cold cases. Theories continued to circulate within the community, but without any solid proof, they remained just that. Theories. The investigation stalled and the case faded from the headlines, leaving behind a trail of unanswered questions that would haunt St. Louis for decades. Ultimately, Kate Teal's murder remains unsolved, a chilling reminder of how fragile justice can be when investigative techniques fall short. The early suspects and promising leads that once seemed to hold so much potential ended up as just another chapter in the long and frustrating search for answers in this tragic case. The murder of Kate Teal in 1909 sent shockwaves throughout the community of St. Louis, a city that at the time was largely characterized by its working-class neighborhoods and relatively quiet everyday life. Kate's death was not just a brutal crime, it was an unsettling event that disrupted the sense of safety and normalcy in the area. In a town where everyone knew everyone, a murder like this was more than just a tragedy. It became a source of fear, suspicion, and rampant speculation. In the days following Kate's murder, fear spread quickly throughout the town. Many of the residents had known Kate, at least by sight, as the woman who frequented the nearby saloon, always with her beer bucket in hand. The fact that she had been killed so violently in her own home left many questioning how safe they truly were. If something so horrific could happen to Kate, people wondered, could it happen to them too? The fear was compounded by the fact that the killer had not been caught, with no immediate arrest. Residents became increasingly anxious, unsure whether a violent murderer was still lurking in their midst. Neighbors locked their doors earlier in the evening, and some even began keeping weapons close at hand, just in case. For many, the uncertainty was the worst part. There was no clear motive, no suspect behind bars, and no sense of closure. It was as if the murderer could be anyone, walking freely among them. As is often the case with unsolved crimes, fear soon gave way to speculation and rumors began to spread. In the absence of official answers from the police, the townspeople filled the gaps with their own theories, many of them based on little more than gossip and hearsay. One of the most persistent rumors was that Kate had been killed for the money she claimed to have hidden in her room. While investigators found little to suggest that Kate was wealthy, her own boastful stories about large sums of cash kept the rumor alive. Some speculated that a stranger, having overheard Kate talking about her hidden fortune, had targeted her for robbery and killed her in the process. Others believed that The killer was someone Kate knew well, possibly even someone she had confided in about her money. This theory led to a number of accusations as people in the community began pointing fingers at various individuals who had interacted with Kate in the days and weeks leading up to her murder. Suspicions fell not only on her close acquaintances like John DeBorta, but also on more peripheral figures like the porter Charles Owens. With little evidence to support any of these claims, however, the accusations only fueled the growing tension in the town. The local newspapers in St. Louis seized on the murder of Kate Teal, recognizing it as a sensational story that would sell papers. Headlines about the brutal slaying of Mrs. Teal and mystery of the locked room murder gripped the public's attention, turning Kate's death into a spectacle. Reporters provided lurid details of the crime scene and the ongoing investigation, often exaggerating or sensationalizing certain aspects to keep readers hooked. The media's portrayal of Kate, focusing on her drinking habits, her alleged wealth, and her mysterious death further shaped public perception of the case. The constant coverage also stoked the flames of fear and suspicion. With every new article came fresh rumors and new theories, some of which had little basis in fact but kept the story alive. The portrayal of Kate as a heavy drinker who flaunted her supposed wealth only fueled the idea that her murder was connected to money, even though the investigation found no concrete evidence of this. In many ways, the media's handling of the case distorted the facts, turning Kate into a symbol of vice and vulnerability rather than a complex individual. Over time, the narrative of Kate Teal's murder became less about the truth of what happened and more about the story the town told itself. The image of Kate as a tragic, drunken woman who brought about her own demise by bragging about her money became deeply ingrained in the public's mind. This narrative, while not necessarily accurate, provided a sense of explanation for a crime that otherwise seemed senseless. The public's perception of the police also began to shift. As the investigation dragged on with no arrests, frustration grew. Many residents felt that the police had mishandled the case, failing to catch the killer when they had the chance. The mishandling of evidence and the rushed conclusions only added to the sense that the authorities were out of their depth, unable to provide the community with the justice it sought. As the weeks turned into months and then years, without any resolution, the murder of Kate Teal became a cautionary tale, a story about the dangers of isolation, the risks of flaunting wealth, whether real or imagined, and the failure of law enforcement to protect the vulnerable. The case faded from the headlines, but it remained a topic of conversation, a dark chapter in the town's history that left an indelible mark on the community. As we bring Kate Teal's story to a close, it's clear that there are still many unanswered questions. While we may never know all the details of what happened on that fateful night in 1909, the pursuit of truth is one we can all be a part of. Cold cases like this remain alive in part because of the curiosity and engagement of people like you. Those who are willing to think critically, explore theories, and ask tough questions. So we encourage you to share your own thoughts or theories about what might have happened to Kate Teal. Could it have been a robbery gone wrong, or was it something more personal? What do you make of the evidence that was found, or the lack of it? Your perspective might bring new light to the case, and even if it doesn't provide a definitive answer, it helps keep the conversation going. Every unsolved case deserves that, because every victim deserves to be remembered. Thank you for joining us in exploring the mystery of Kate Teal's murder. Keep her story alive by staying curious, asking questions, and continuing the search for answers. Perhaps one day, with the help of modern investigative techniques or new information, justice can finally be found for Kate Teal. Until then, her legacy lives on in the minds of those who refuse to forget. Before we take off for today, we'd like to remind you of our sponsor, Audible. If you're like me and love diving into a great story but can't always find the time to sit down and read, Audible has you covered. Whether you're commuting, working out, or just relaxing at home, Audible lets you enjoy a vast library of audiobooks, podcasts, and so much more, anytime, anywhere. And here's the best part. Audible is offering you a 30-day free trial, which includes a free audiobook that you can keep forever. That's right. Even if you cancel, the audiobook is yours to enjoy. Whether you're into gripping thrillers, fascinating true crime, or inspiring self-help, Audible has something for everyone. So head on over to audibletrial.com/larry21 to start your 30-day free trial and claim your free audiobook today. Don't miss out on this opportunity to explore Audible's incredible collection and find your next favorite story. And with that, we'd like to remind you You want to support the channel? You can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS. Your support helps the channel grow, upgrade our equipment, bring new hosts, and eventually take this show on the road. And of course, you can find the audio version of our podcast on Good Pods. And of course, give us a thumbs up if you like our video. Hit that subscribe button down below. And share the video if you like it with your friends and other true crime fans. As always, thank you so much for watching and listening. We'll catch you next time.
You have been listening to the True Crime Never Sleeps podcast. Thank you for listening. You can follow us on Facebook at True Crime Never Sleeps podcast and on Twitter at True Crime NS. And follow us on Instagram at True Crime Never Sleeps. Thanks for watching. If you want to support the show, buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS or become a patron at patreon.com/truecrimeneversleeps.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.